How are you, first of all?
I'm fine. And can I just say what you said was, how are you, festival?
Right, I need to speak clearer.
How are you?
Yes, I mean, we're on radio. How's your diction?
What did you have for breakfast today?
Oh, yes. What did I have for breakfast? I had a mushy kind of mix that I did in a blender.
Fantastic. What kind of mix? What are we talking?
Oh, tomatoes, carrots, all sorts of healthy things.
Oh, is that the new blending diet? I've heard of
it. The thing is that one of my best friends, Bob the Butcher, his nephew is the juice king of America, and he makes juices. And anyways, a long, long story. But anyway, now that's why I'm trying to get into juicing.
Okay. Oh, right.
So you're going to make your own juicer machine?
Not actually build the machine myself. No, I've got one. I'm not really Doctor Who. I'm only an actor.
Lovely.
Jan, well, it's the interview over.
Yes, you thought I was real. There was once I was in America and a guy stood up and I said, excuse me, Doctor, when you were in your third persona, what were you thinking when you opened the TARDIS door onto the planet Thar? I thought, is this guy taking a mickey? He wasn't. He was real. He thought I was the Doctor. So I went, who was my third person? Oh, yes, it was John Pertwee. And I went, when I was, I opened the door and I thought, an interesting planet. And I waffled on for a bit and other people laughed and that was fine. And then at the end of it, he went, thank you, Doctor, and sat down. He was very pleased.
Lovely. So what are you speaking about at the union this evening? What's happening?
Well, come afterwards and I'll tell you, because I've no idea.
So is it going to be a question and answer?
Yeah, as far as I know, yes, there'll be a little interview. Then some people from the floor will ask questions and, I shall try and make up the answers. And so the evening merrily will carry on.
Lovely.
That's good. And you were born Percy James Patrick Kent Smith. I think that was your name. And now you're Sylvester McCoy. And I wondered, how do you live with a name change? How have you kind of acclimatized to Sylvester McCoy? Did you choose that name yourself?
No, I didn't. I was doing a play. I just started acting, and we were doing this show, and it was a show on the play, really, called An Evening with Sylvester McCoy, the Human Bomb. And the director, Ken Campbell, thought it'd be really good, because I did a load of stunts. I used to bang a nail up my nose, explode bombs in my chest, set light to my head, have nails, have bricks broken on my chest, mentally combust cotton wool, drink a pint in a minute, head butt a potato into 1,000 pieces, escape from a mail bag. I did all sorts of stunts. And it was like the Marx Brothers doing stunts. Great Wit, written by Ken Campbell. And this kind of, the skeleton where all the stunts. But he wanted the audience to believe I was real. So he said to me, yeah, it'd be really good if we can stick in a programme that Sylvester McCoy was played by Sylvester McCoy, wouldn't it, Sylvester? And I thought, yeah, actually, don't mind. Yeah, why not? So I did. And reviewers reviewed it and went on about how, yes, it was the real McCoy and it was great and all that. And I thought, actually, this is a good name. I think I'll stick with it. So I did.
It's a fun name. You were the last Doctor before the series ended in 89.
Thanks for reminding me.
Obviously, did it come as a disappointment when that sort of series finished? Or did you sort of just move on, find other things to do?
Both. Both, really. I mean, I was disappointed because when I originally first did it, Peter Davison told me that he had been told by Patrick Troughton, so this is something, passed down through doctors, only do 3 years. And, Patrick Troughton was my doctor, so I thought, wow, yeah, I'll take... And sadly, I never met Patrick. He died before I could meet him. But anyway, that was in my head. And when it came to the end of the second season, the producer said, now, we want to do a fourth season. We'd want you to do a fourth season. And I went, And he went, if you don't do a fourth season, we won't do a third. Oh. And I went, So I said, okay, I'll do a fourth season. And he said, we're going to, because I was only doing 15 episodes a year then, and he was going to back to 26. And I thought, well, actually, it'd be quite interesting to live a whole life, a whole year as Doctor Who. I was blessed in a way that I only had to do half a year as a Who, and I could go off and do other stuff, But that was, as an actor, that's a great, we love doing an infinite variety of things. So anyway, I was annoyed when it came to it that they, forced me into it. I got my head round it. I would then got to look forward to it, and then they put it on hiatus.
Mm-hmm. But in 1990, you were voted the best Doctor Who. So,
well, that was very nice.
But how did you cope with negativity before that?
Well, there was a lot of negativity, and there always is. There will be, I think, you know, for Peter as well. Certain, you know, vocal, small, tiny minority of Whovians will get very upset, and that happened with me. You know, people were quite negative in many ways. You just close your mind to it and get on with it, and concentrate on what you're doing. And after, you know, the end of the second season, we had a real feeling that something was happening. It was beginning to come back, and we were pulling it back. We were going somewhere, and the third season really kind of underlined that. We thought, wow, yes, we've got something. So it was a bit of a slap in the face. Did we take it off when we hadn't quite finished the journey? The fourth season, we would have, you know, really brought it back. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you have to be thick-skinned as an actor. Mm. Although deep down, you know, you're a child and you weep.
Yes, on that, I mean, it is quite... I mean, it's obviously a pleasurable thing to act, but why do you act?
Why do I act? Well, I act. Honestly, my theory is why I act is I was an orphan. And because of that, I was brought up, and I had a very merry childhood, really, but because I was brought up with my granny and my aunties and uncles and things like that in a small Dunoon, If I wasn't an orphan, I could demand love. I could demand interest in me. I could demand 100% focus on me, because it was my right. That's what a parent's job is to do. You know, some of them don't do it very well, but generally that's the contract, isn't it, between child, mum and dad. But I didn't have that. So I think what I did was I developed a way of me getting noticed. They must have driven them mad. But anyway, that's it. That was the early acting, you know, thing. And when I was young, people kept saying, you know, I should be an actor. You know, cause that was obviously there. I was just, you know, my eyebrows went up and I smiled and yeah, ta 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 ta, whatever it is.
It worked.
And then they buy me an ice cream.
And you joined a seminary in Aberdeen.
Yes.
And tried for a Dominican order.
Yeah.
So how would your life be different? How do you now, I suppose, reconcile your priestly self?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be sound too grand, but in a way I feel as if I'm part of some sort of religious grouping, science fiction fans. Mm. You know, it's kind of quasi-religious thing. Mm. I might be a cardinal in there somewhere. Yes, no, I did. I went off to become a priest. That was principally to win a bet. Because at school, our headmistress, Rosie O'Grady, what a great name, she used to give us vocational talks. And she'd invite captains of steamships, firemen, coalmen, street sweepers, doctors, priests, and to talk to us. And they always enthused about their jobs. And so I used to put my hand up for everyone. Early acting, you see. He thought, he wants to do all the roles. Bottom is my name. Anyway, I put my hand up for all of them. And then I put my hand up the day the priest came in, and something strange happened. Rosie O'Grady gave me and another boy, Danny Sweeney, the afternoon off to go and see the priest. Now, she'd never given us the afternoon off to go and see, you know, the paddle steamer captain or whatever other jobs we thought we would want to go. But delighted to get this. Off we went. And when we got to the rectory, Danny Sweeney lost his bottle. And I went, I can do it. You're a coward. Bang, bang, bang. I want to be a priest. Bang, that was it. That was it. There was no angels and light and God speaking to me, or you are God. None of that went on. It was just, you know, I'll show Danny Sweeney. But when I got there, I loved every minute of it. Mm. And I did get housemaid's knee from praying. And when I decided then not to become a secular priest, but to become a monk, to really go for it. Mm. And when I left, the rector of the seminary said that, that no one had ever done that before. And I met a priest many years later when I was in a sinful situation. And he, I was having an affair with a New York Jewish princess. And he said to me, oh, we remember you. You were a saint among sinners. And there was I sitting next to him thinking, oh my God, if you only knew me now.
And do you have any spirituality left in you now?
Deep down. I think we all have spirituality, but I mean, I don't believe in God and all that. No.
So to your most recent project, one of your most recent projects, The Hobbit, what have you most enjoyed about filming that trilogy so far?
Well, it was great working with Peter Jackson, who is an astonishingly nice man, down to earth, but, you know, focused, driven, knows what he wants and gets it. But you don't notice, you know, he doesn't wear, you know, kind of jack boots and, you know, a riding crop and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it was great working with him. Great being in New Zealand. Great getting to know New Zealand, because New Zealand is a wonderfully interesting place. You know, they had the vote in 1890 for women in 1890 something or other. In many ways, it's incredibly advanced. In other ways, it's a way back. And it's this kind of wonderful mix. They are wonderfully inventive. And that's part of the success that Peter and Richard Taylor, who runs Weta, have had, is because they had to invent things to make what they wanted to do work, because it took forever to get them sent out from anywhere. And that made, you know, their imaginations are so honed. And so it was great working with all that. And it was, you know, a lovely role they gave me. It was a beautiful role, really.
I mean, you've got a very summery style, bowler hat, green suit. How did you cope with the heat of New Zealand?
Well, it's not that hot, except in the summer. And this very south, they have snow. It's, you know, they've got kind of like an Alps down there. It can get cold. And most of the time, sadly, I actually discovered I was lacking in vitamin D and after a while. And the reason was I was filming in New Zealand when it was winter there. And I was coming home to England when it was winter here. And I did that for 2 years. And I didn't really actually see any sunshine. And my vitamin D went down. So, there were some sunny days. Also, I was in the studio quite a lot. But no, the north of the North Island gets quite hot, semi-tropical. The middle of the North Island, or the south of the South Island, is a bit like, it has very warm English summers, very much like England. And then the South Island is like Scotland, the southern uplands and the north part, and then it becomes more Highland on the south, and then becomes the Alps in the very far south. Fascinating island. Only 4 million people in it. You know, it's just astonishing there's hardly anyone there.
So you play very physical, always funny guy parts. Is it hard always having to be comic? I know you brought seriousness to the latter stages of your Doctor Who career, but do you ever just really want a depressive part where you can't even have any scope to be funny?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I enjoy comedy. I enjoy being, you know, making people laugh and seeing them smile. But I also do enjoy playing villains. And I did do once. I did the opening film for Channel 5, which, because of, I don't know, was hardly ever seen because hardly anyone had Channel 5 when it opened. I played a villain. I mean, a real life. It was a wooden. It sounds comedy. Wooden-legged railway worker, you know, who kidnapped a girl and two girls, killed one, and then fell in love with the second one and let her go, and he's now in prison. And he was really nasty. But when I did that, I quite enjoyed doing it nasty. But I remember once I had to do a rape scene, and they had a clammy on top of something. And it was all horrible. And afterwards, I felt really dirty, so I had to go and take a shower, and then. Every time I normally did it, I'd try and come out and crack a few jokes with this, with the you know, the camera crew, the crew, and you know all the crew, to make them laugh, because I really felt. But I did enjoy. I mean, I do. There's a thing I do on the internet called Minister of Chance, and in that I play a villain, and I really enjoy that. They said, "Would I do it?" I said, "Only if I can play a villain."
Are you going to vote in the Scottish Independence?
Yes, I thought that question would come. Well, I find it very difficult. I can't vote because I don't live there. You have to live there. Mm. If I was Polish and living there, I could vote, strangely.
Lovely.
But in my heart, the romance of it is kind of appealing. But in my head, I've got this feeling that I don't want Scotland to abandon England to itself. Mm. It needs, you know, some left-wing Scottish, you know, kind of heavies to come down here, you know, put it right. Yeah, no, it's a very difficult one. I don't know. I'm debating with myself all over the place. I wonder whether if UKIP drives, you know, the Tories very far to the right, and they decide, or they come out of Europe. I'm a very pro-European because I'm an internationalist, and it seems to me that's the way, the building block towards, you know, an international kind of government. But so would it be better to be independent in Scotland and stay in Europe, or will England? It's very difficult. Very, very difficult.
And finally, from would-be priest to Doctor Who semi-god, and finally to a wizard, what's your view on the meaning of life?
My view on the meaning of life, I think it's a blessing to have it. I was blessed because I think I personally have got a sunshine personality, because I've been told this so many times, I've started to believe it. You should never believe your own press. But anyway, I just think that, you know, I think it's a wonderful thing, life. And I get very sad when I meet people who look at it and don't see it the same way. I think the meaning of life is to enjoy it. Yeah, that's what it means.
So you've obviously held an incredibly varied acting career. If you can sing a song to sum up that career, what would it be? And could you sing a little bit of it?
Have you heard about a big strong man who lives in a caravan? Have you heard about the Jeffrey Johnson fight when that great black American won the night? You can bring all the heavyweights you got, 'cause I got a little man to beat the lot. He plays the organ in the belfry, and he wants to fight Jack Dempsey. That's my brother, Sylvester. What's he got? He's got a row of 40 medals on his chest, big chest. Explored all the Arctic in his vest. He knows no rest. Bigger the arm, stronger the punch. Hellfire, son of a gun. Don't push, just shove. Plenty of room for thee and me. He's got an arm as big as a leg, a lady's leg, and a punch that sink a battleship, big ship. It takes all the army and the navy to put the wind up, Sylvester.
That definitely deserves a round of applause. And I got you.
Does it sum it up? I think it does in a way. Because it's a little man who did do all sorts of amazing things.
Well, it certainly entertained me. That's one thing. And to say thank you, I got you some Real McCoy's crisps.
Oh, thank you very much. That's really good.
Very
sweet chicken. Oh, great. Anyway, never mind. That's the cut.